You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. I and everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really, you know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
Time we're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat this shit. Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
What's the matter, Shane?
Dude, I'm out of beer. I thought I had some, but I didn't have any. I left the box in there, and I went to go grab one, and unless one of my kids snuck one out, which, just kidding, they didn't do that. My kids don't do that. But, yeah, so here I am, sober Shane. What's up?
Well, this is maybe this is a good lesson to all the listeners out there. Obviously, we got a game on Saturday. It's time to go stock the fridge so you don't end up like cousin Shane is on this show. And speaking of not drinking alcohol, Shane, let's start the show off with this. I don't know if you heard the news out of Knoxville, Shane, but the BYU Alumni Association, they're planning a tailgate festivities there for the Week 2 game when they come down to Rocky Top. And have you heard what they're calling this event?
No. What is it?
It's the Cougar Town Tailgate.
The Cougar Town Tailgate. I like it. I think I've been to one of those parties, man.
So I don't know what a BYU Cougar Town Tailgate looks like, Shane, but they're going to be in World's Fair Park on Saturday. You know, you might as well go say what's up to those fine folks because they are good people. They're going to be coming down to Knoxville. Give them an SEC welcome there. And I saw that they're also selling those y'all shirts. So that's going to be a big thing. There's going to be plenty of y'all shirts when BYU comes to Rocky Top.
Oh, man. You know, it's so, you know, I'm hearing great things about it, Mike. You know what it is? And when I go, I like to make fun of the opposing team. Mm-hmm. This may be the toughest one. I'm still going to do it, but it's still going to be tough, Mike. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You got to welcome them right. You know what?
That's right. Give them a hug, Mike.
All right, Shane, before we go around the league, just wanted to get on this real quick. I know people love these damn polls for some reason, but the AP poll was released on Monday, the official preseason poll. So I know you're not a big fan of these. I'm not particularly either, so we'll just go over this pretty quickly here. But Alabama debuted at number 2, Georgia number 3, LSU number 6, Florida number 8, Texas A&M number 12, and Auburn, number 16. So the SEC there's got 6 in the top 16, 4 of the top 8. And then in the other receiving category, Missouri's number 26, so just outside the poll. Mississippi State, number 28, and South Carolina, number 35. So all in all there in the top 35, SEC's got 9 teams represented in this poll. So that's pretty good.
Dude, that's real good. I mean, think about that. 8 teams in the nation, 4 of them are the SEC. You know, I think that's very impressive. Let me ask you, though, and I don't like – we don't like these polls and stuff like that, but do you think anybody on this list is a little higher than they should be?
You're going to get me in trouble here, Shane, but it's definitely right there at number 8 for me, the Florida Gators. I'm not – I'm obviously not sold on them. Texas A&M a little high at number 12. Auburn at 16 is a little low for me. But aside from that, I mean,
are you surprised Missouri? I mean, I don't even know if they're allowed to get on this thing, but I thought maybe they'd be a top 25 team at least, you know, because they've had a lot of hype coming into this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing for Missouri, I don't think it really matters if they're ranked or not because their schedule is so light. I mean, they kind of need to prove something anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's an outstanding chance that they're, you know, 5-0, 6-0 to start the season. That mm-hmm. will get them into the top 20 before things start getting real for them. So I'm not too concerned about where Missouri starts. It's all about how they finish, because that at the beginning, I mean, they're playing a bunch of nobodies anyway.
Yeah. Do you like that bait, though?
This is going to be a lot of Florida-Miami talk, so we're off on the right start, Shane. But before we get to that game, the big week zero game, let's go around the league.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting here in Nashville.
Take it down.
Coach Derek Mason, he spoke to the media here recently, and he got into the quarterback competition there in Nashville. Let's jump to what Coach Mason said, and then we'll discuss it on the back end here.
Yeah, I mean, I thought during the regular, you know, my situations, I thought they were pretty good. You know, like in the two-minute situation, okay, man, I need better decision-making, okay? One thing about that, man, you can't take sacks. Can't take sacks, like in those situations. You got to take care of the football and understand how you're managing the clock. If you got a timeout, if you got no timeouts, like what does that look like? That's why you put them in those situations. Again, it's all information. But I thought they did a good job of manufacturing points when we were in the red zone. They did a good job of, you know, moving the ball, and especially with the warm group as the quarterbacks rotated. They both did a good job of you know, finding receivers, and I thought they threw good balls. I thought there were some catchable balls. We missed a couple early, came back, made some good catches late. So overall, man, I thought the quarterbacks were solid.
All right, Shane. So Derek Mason, you know, I thought this was kind of interesting. I really like hearing him talk, because it seems like he tells it straight and he tells you what he's really looking for. And yes, this is kind of like getting into the finer details of a quarterback competition. You know, we all want to know, you know, how accurate they are and, you know, how effective they are leading a team and all that. And Derek Mason's taking this thing to another level, just really interested in how his guys respond to tough, adverse situations.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I'll tell you what, out of all the quarterback competitions, I really do think that this is the closest one. And, you know, I think Mason, and I think if anybody was going to name a starting quarterback first out of all these coaches, it would have been him. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, he hasn't done it because he just doesn't know yet.
Yeah, I would also say, though, that I don't know why he would kind of let that information out there, just for the fact that, you know, they're not playing. There's been teams in the past, like I think they opened with Tennessee State and teams of that nature here recently. They're opening with the Georgia Bulldogs. Mm-hmm. Coming to Nashville. So I don't think you want Kirby Smart having any idea what you're throwing at him. And I think just based on what I'm hearing, Shane, it sounds like it's going to be about 75-80% Georgia fans at this game. They're fired up for this game. It's Labor Day weekend. They're going to descend on it. So it's almost going to be like a road game. So I think that just complicates, you know, it makes me seem like whatever Derek Mason here is selling of these tough situations, they're going to, whoever he names as a starting quarterback is going to get that out of the opening gate.
So you think he's hiding? You think he knows who it is and he's just not going to tell because of Georgia?
Well, he may not know who it is, but I just disagree with your point that, you know, they would name it early in the training camp, because I just think they're going to keep it close to the vest, because they want Georgia just having no idea what's coming at them.
Okay. All right. We're off to a strong start, Mike, you know?
And then sticking here in Vanderbilt, Shane, I thought this was particularly interesting because for those who are not aware, Tim Horton is the new running backs coach here in Vanderbilt. And he was a longtime running backs coach at Auburn. And we know how Auburn, up until last year, I mean, I believe they had a streak of 8 or 9 years with a 1,000-yard rusher. And there were a lot of guys that came through that program that went to the NFL from the running back position. Tim Horton's a hell of a running back coach. I think the only reason he's not at Auburn anymore, not exactly an elite recruiter. And I think at Vanderbilt, they obviously have some talent. Keyshawn Vaughn may be the best running back in the SEC. And I just thought it was particularly interesting. Coach Mason talked about how Keyshawn Vaughn's game and all the running backs there at Vanderbilt could get better this year under Tim Horton's leadership.
Keyshawn already accomplished a lot last year. You bring in Tim Horton, he's got a long list of great running backs he's coached. Do you believe the right position coach can make a player that much better?
You know, I definitely believe that the right position coach always makes a good player better. You know, he's able, you know, first of all, that position coach winds up being a great teacher. Okay, I mean, and being able to get them from where they are to where they want to be. They're able to assess, you know, where you're at, talk about the things that are specific to, you know, how you need to get better, and then, you know, give you a process, okay, and a game plan to do that. And, you know, with Coach Horton's experience, that's exactly what he's done. But not just that, I think, you know, man, you see a better Jamari Wakefield, you see a better, you know, Keon Brooks. I think when I take a look at these guys, these guys are all getting better. I think Coach Horton, you know, understands the temperament. I think he knows when to push. I think he knows when to pull. But, you know, as I've seen Keyshawn specifically, you know, I mean, Keyshawn's done everything that coach is asking him to do. And that's where I'm starting to see, you know, I mean, a more balanced Keyshawn Vaughn. And that's what this team needs in 2019.
All right, Shane. So you kind of see what I'm saying there. Right, it seems like Derek Mason's pretty fired up about having Tim Horton on his staff and what he can bring to the running back room.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, this coach, and honestly, almost forgot he was up there, to be honest with you. But the last 6 years that he was with Gus, you kind of hit on it. I mean, we had some real studs coming through there, like Trey Mason and Payne and Kerryon Johnson, you know, some of those guys that are playing at the next level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it kind of mirrors a little bit what Mason was saying earlier this week when he was talking just about the room in general, you know, that there's just kind of that swagger in the running back room. Everybody's getting better, not just Keyshawn Vaughn, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be big because they're, with the unsettled quarterback position, they're going to rely on this ground game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Lexington. Mark Stoops recently met with the media to break down Kentucky's second scrimmage. And if you remember his first scrimmage thoughts, I mean, he was calling some guys out. Cash Daniel kind of came out and said the same thing. The effort, maybe not fully there, called out some of the younger players. Didn't say anyone specifically, but just said, you know, this ain't high school. You've got to come with something different. This is the SEC. And based on what Coach Stoops had to say here, I think they got what they were looking for from the second scrimmage.
Better second scrimmage, you know, as far as, you know, I think both units, the offense and the defense and the special teams, all three units, did some really good things at times. The things that I want to see cleaned up is I felt like there were times when one side or the other had success because of the other side being a bit sloppy. And that we got to get cleaned up. I want to see more just good fundamental football across the board where one side or the other is winning because the other side is making outstanding plays. And that wasn't always the case today, but I feel like our position on the football was much better defensively. We were much more sound across the board, made the offense work for their yards. Offense did some good things as well, moved it at times. You know, we stalled them early, kept them out of the end zone. Then late in the scrimmage, they got a few. And offensively, we're going to be fine. We're going to be good. You know, they continue to run the ball very effectively. We're doing some really good things. You know, as far as our play calling and, you know, the system that we have in place, there's some hard plays to defend out there. And I think Terry's getting more and more comfortable with just the you know, first, second down passing game.
All right, Shane, so it sounds like the message was received loud and clear from some of these Wildcats. Stoops, it seems like he was really pleased with both sides of the ball, which is kind of interesting coming out of a scrimmage. You know, you would think one would win the day, but it just sounded like the defense got improved, but at the same time, they're happy with the offense's progression here in training camp.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is what we heard about, but you know, he ended up talking about the offense. He used the word great. The offense looked great. So something that he hit on was Terry looking good in first and second down. So one thing, you know, I think it would be hard as a head coach to look at a scrimmage and not be biased to the offense or defense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, if you go in and you're a defensive-minded coach, you want your defense to do good. You want the offense to do good, but you want your defense to hold up. And same thing with the offense side, you know. So I like how he made it sound, you know, it made sense to me that it doesn't come down to who's letting up the bigger plays, but who's making the bigger plays. So it's just an interesting way of looking at scrimmages. And, you know, that's why he's one of the, I think, like one of the better coaches in the SEC, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely. And how about this, Shane? We did not touch on this when we were talking about the AP poll, but Kentucky did not get a single vote of any team in the SEC. And you think, I'm not saying they should be ranked. I'm not saying they shouldn't be really necessarily either. I wouldn't rank them, but I could certainly see of all the voters, someone putting them in there after a 10-win season. Any motivation here, extra motivation, I guess you could say, for the Wildcats it's just like they have to start from scratch here?
It's kind of ridiculous, Mike, you know, because when you look at this list, it's almost identical on how the season ended last year, you know, but they pick a few teams, and Kentucky's one of them that to say, you know what, there's just no way they can do it. There's just no way they can win 10 games this year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the chip on the shoulder. I mean, you got to remember this. We were late into last season, and they still had an opportunity to play for an SEC championship. Mm-hmm. And, yes, they lost Benny Snell, and, yes, they lost a lot of defense. But there's a lot of pieces coming back, man. And the main ones, I think, is Terry. I think the quarterback, he's healthy, you know. I think we're going to see a better quarterback. I think the running back situation is great. And they do have pieces on that defense to be competitive and stay in any game. So, yeah, they're not getting a lot of respect this year, man.
And final update here for Kentucky, Shane. Unfortunate news. Freshman quarterback Nick Scalzo. This is a guy we touched on previously who got cleared right before fall camp because he got injured last year in high school. It looks like he's injured his knee once again. That's terrible. Kentucky's kind of thin at quarterback already. This guy was competing to be, you know, he probably wouldn't have played this year. He was competing for number three, but just hate to see any injury, you know what?
Yeah, man. And fall camp's wrapping up, man. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're almost there. You know, you're going to have some during the season, but it's always the fall camp when these kids come back that you're worried the most. And we're almost there, guys. Just keep praying.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Oxford.
Auditorio, miss.
Matt Luke met with the media here on Monday. And he didn't offer up a ton of information, but I just thought it was interesting. His latest update on his team improvement, their improvement during training camp. And then, most importantly, offensive line, Shane, it sounds very optimistic that they think they're going to get senior right tackle Alex Givens back in the lineup. This would be huge. This is one of their best players overall. And if he's not going, Shane, they're probably going to start a true freshman at right tackle without Alex Givens. So here's Luke on the improvement of his team and then on just the latest update here on Alex Givens.
You said big improvement over the first scrimmage. What are some of the things that you think you did better in this one?
Yeah, all the things, just the body language and the competitive spirit. And, you know, I thought the back and forth was good and the competition and the energy level. I just thought it was better.
You're obviously 12 days away now. Are you starting to get to that place where you kind of get away from camp and more into game week prep a little bit?
Yeah, you know, still, you know, with a young team, I think it's important to get the speed of the game. But what we did have a kind of half and half today where we're introducing Memphis but still getting the speed of the game just to try to get ahead because we do got a little bit of extra time.
Around a little bit, do you have an update on him?
He's doing more football-specific stuff, like just trying to build that base so when he does come back and can start contact, he's not starting from zero. he'll have a base built, and he's starting to do more and working his legs more. And, you know, he's looked pretty good. So, we're all anxious to get him back out there, and he's moving closer. We have to be smart and progress him, but I think he's on track. And we'll get the final word Monday of next week.
I was going to ask, is there a point where he has to be back out there to realistically be ready?
I think I worry more about his conditioning than anything else. I think he's played enough football, and we'll integrate pretty quickly to that part of it. It's just having that base where he can go out there and function at full speed.
All right, Shane, so this is going to be one of the more interesting week one games, Ole Miss at Memphis, I should say.
Yeah.
And if the Rebels do not have Alex Givens, you know, I don't want to overstate how big just one guy is, but, you know, I don't think he makes or breaks the game necessarily. But when you factor in, you know, one of your star seniors or a true freshman, I don't think it's completely, you know, unrealistic to say that I don't know if they can win without him.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to have him, man. I mean, I didn't feel encouraged listening to Coach talk there. So I think Memphis game, it's going to be real tough to have him there. So they may have to have that freshman starting.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting because I kind of got – I mean, I see why you would think that. But just from what he was saying, it sounds like to me like they will have him. But maybe, you know, he was noting the conditioning there. That's something that they've kind of brought up during training camp, adjusting not only to Rich Rod's system, but on just his tempo that he likes to use, and they can use it as a weapon. But if you got one lineman 10 yards down the field and everyone else is in good shape, yeah, that seems to be the biggest issue for Alex Givens right now because he just can't do it. But, I mean, he looked like he was in hell of shape there at SEC Media Day, so I'm just hopeful that he can go. You know what?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's just the type of injury. You know, when you say lower back, it feels, you know, I mean, you could probably feel good walking around and doing walkthroughs and things like that. But when it comes to hitting and stuff like that, you know, I mean, he hasn't been doing that. So maybe they work him in and hopefully he'll be back. I don't know. But I'm just reading the way the coach sounded. It just didn't sound positive to me. But I've been wrong a few times, Mike, you know, just a couple. But I've been wrong just a few times in my life. Not this season, though, baby. Not this season. I'm going to take Vegas over.
All right, Shay, final update here on Ole Miss. I wanted to make this note. This was first reported by David Johnson of 24/7 Sports, but it sounds like Ole Miss is expecting to add a tight end, a guy by the name of Chase Rogers. You may be familiar with this guy, Shane. He played at Louisiana Lafayette for two seasons, but he was a longtime Tennessee commit under Butch Jones. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those sad situations where they hold a guy's commitment for like a year and a half, and then signing day is coming up, and they're like, hey, buddy, we ain't got room for you. So that's what happened with him at Tennessee, and I don't think it's of any fault of Chase Rogers that he had to go to Louisiana Lafayette. So it sounds like he's finally getting his chance to come to the SEC. And this is a kid, Shane. He had 216 receptions, 3,700 receiving yards, 44 touchdowns. He owns all the records in Mississippi high school football at receiving. So, I mean, this guy, he could be now he's not going to be eligible this season because he's injured and he's transferring. So, got to make that note there. But, hell, Shane, Ole Miss got to be happy about getting this potential tight end here for the 2020 season.
Absolutely. But injuries is the thing that concerns me with this guy because he's got a bum foot right now. And then last year he missed because of his shoulder. So, I mean, this guy, you know, he's been battling through some injuries. But, you know, you see potential in high school, you know, he's a hell of a receiver. And you know, I've seen some of his highlight clips when he was thinking about coming to Tennessee. I was excited about having this guy. But if he can get all the pieces together next year, Ole Miss may have him a hell of a tight end down there.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, he was Miles Brennan was his quarterback, so the LSU backup. So that's just kind of an interesting little tie there. Hmm. All right, Shane, we've been teasing it all week. We obviously know it's a game day.
Yeah.
We got Florida, Miami, and Orlando. It's time to get into some Miami, Florida football talk.
It's football time, baby.
We're all in. I'm in order. I'm bracing.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the center of the college universe. Who needs hype when you have a Florida-Miami game? This is not just some rivalry. This is one-on-one combat.
Brothers and sisters, I don't know what this world is coming to.
In a series filled with bad blood, the Gators take on the Canes in a Sunshine State grudge match.
All right, Shane, we usually don't have the opposing coach, but I just thought it would be kind of interesting to start there. So let's go to Manny Diaz, who spoke with the media here on Monday. And obviously, he's got a, you know, a long relationship with Dan Mullen. He worked with him twice there at Mississippi State. And I believe both times, you know, he got promoted to other jobs where I guess you could say it would be a promotion. I think it was the first time he went to Texas to go work for Mack Brown, who was not very far removed from a national championship. And then the second time around, obviously went down to Miami to go work with Mark Richt. And the only reason I say that's an upgrade is because he's from Miami. I think his grandfather was former mayor down there. So it was a bit of a homecoming. And obviously it's worked out for Manny Diaz. And Manny Diaz was asked about his relationship with Dan Mullen. And for all the bad blood there, Shane, between the fan bases and the players, it sounds like Manny Diaz and Dan Mullen are kind of right on the same page here heading into this game.
They just love each other.
You talk about not only what it's going to feel like finally being a head coach in your first college football game, but also looking across the sideline, seeing Dan Mullen, a guy who you've shared a sideline with, and also if you could just touch on how much you respect him as a head coach, also him as a play caller.
Yeah, well, let's even start there just as a person. I've got a lot of respect for Dan Mullen. You know, I think personally we get along very well. We consider him a friend. You know, we've worked together twice, and in two of those years, Mississippi State had two of the best years in their history. I think I feel like we've always viewed the game similarly. He's kind of a very creative guy, a little bit of an outside the box type thinker, and we've tried to always be the same way defensively. And I think that's why we always got along well together. I know that his offense is very well thought out. And it's not just Dan at this point, his staff, a bunch of guys I know like John Hevesy and Brian Johnson and Billy Gonzalez and Greg Knox. They've been together a long time. So you've heard me talk in the last 8 months about how important staff synergy is and chemistry and unity and all that type of stuff and how the players respond to that. Well, he's got that on his offensive staff. And that's what we've been trying to build out here with our defensive staff. And there's some other guys on our defensive staff here that were at Mississippi State in 2015. So we know it's going to be a challenge. You know, I don't think that there's any sort of advantage because we know him and he knows us and whatever. I think if anything, you just get on the grass and it's going to come down to, you know, I mean, all the standards of terms of, you know, who can block and who can get off blocks and who can cover and, you know, who can throw and catch.
I thought that was particularly interesting, Shane, particularly when Manny Diaz admitted, you know, what Dan Mullen has created on his offensive staff, which these guys have been with him since the very beginning of Mississippi State. So this is 10 or 11 years, I think, here on the same staff. Manny Diaz looking for that same continuity on his staff. I just thought that was kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, he's saying all the right things, and I don't know. I just don't like this, you know. This is why we started that Tell the Truth segment, because he's not telling the truth. He wants to whip Dan. Dan wants to beat him, you know what I'm saying? And they're just coming out and kissing each other's ass for 10 minutes. That's just a waste of time. Let's talk football, you know what I'm saying? You know, am I wrong with that? I mean, when we play NCAA, I love you. You're family, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But when we play against each other, I want to destroy you. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to tell you how great your offense play calling is. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think if they've worked together multiple times, it kind of says they do enjoy each other and they kind of, I don't know, they're kind of like on the same page.
You think so? Yeah, maybe you're right. You never know. I've worked with some cool cats along my day, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
Maybe I'm just...
And then I think the real test is like, would you work with them again? And he obviously would, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm with you. I forgot Dan Enos was down there too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the game, Manny Diaz did hit on that, and this was one thing that I had not thought of, Shane. Just the fact that, I mean, obviously it's a neutral site game, but these coaches kind of look at it a little bit differently. And I expect there's going to be, and this is, I'm not basing this off of anything, just my own perception, but I expect there's going to be more Florida fans than there are Miami fans. I could be wrong, but he said his split crowd, you know what I mean? He's anticipating both fan bases there, obviously. And I just thought this comment here was interesting on just his thoughts on playing in front of a neutral field and taking that into account.
I know this is your first game, but Miami has traditionally played Florida, Florida State, other big opponents to kick off a season.
Right.
What's the difference between playing a big game like this where the nation is watching versus, you know, maybe a D2 school or whatever? Obviously, a lot more pressure right off the bat, correct?
Well, where it's going to really factor in, again, and if you think about it on both sides, is the players with the least amount of experience. But this game goes even beyond that. It's not just a big game, you know, which you see these cross-conference games. It is a rivalry game in a stadium where the fans are going to be split 50-50. And that's very unique. That's, you know, that's not going to occur, I don't think, any other weekend, week one or week zero, week one in college football. So everything that happens on Saturday, half the stadium's going to go crazy, if not the entire stadium go crazy. So the emotions and the emotional swings in being able to manage that. So I don't think that you're going to prepare your team any differently if you're playing a quote-unquote lesser opponent, as you say. But the idea of getting a guy that maybe has very limited game experience to be able to handle the emotions, because when something good happens for either side, you're going to feel like you're on top of a mountain. And when something bad happens for either side, you're going to feel like you're in the lowest valley ever. So to be able to manage our emotions and to stay even-keeled and stay present, I think will be so crucial on Saturday.
All right, Shane. So Manny Diaz, what do you have to? Do you agree with him that playing in front of a neutral crowd here? I never quite put it together quite like he's put it here, but it makes a lot of sense. Just the swings of the game, and we definitely get that at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. So maybe the Gators, they're a little bit more accustomed to this. This is something the Hurricanes need to be aware of heading into this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you one thing. When I went up to Battle of Bristol, mm-hmm. and Virginia Tech was on one side and Tennessee's on the other, it was kind of weird, you know, because you felt like you're at a home game. But then all of a sudden, when something goes bad, you know, you're like, man, there's a lot of fans here for the opposing team. You know what I'm saying? So do you think that this game – I think Florida travels well. I think they travel better than Miami. I don't think it's going to be 50-50. Do you?
No, I don't think it's going to be 50-50, but I don't think he can come out and say that, you know, like.
Right. No, I know. I think the Gators are going to have a little bit of a home field advantage here.
Yeah, I'm thinking 60-40, maybe 65-35, that type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it'll get much better than that. It doesn't seem like Miami fans travel to their own damn town, so I just don't know how many of them are going to come up for Orlando, but this is just a little bit different story. You know, there's a big
theme park.
there's a theme park. They're having like a crazy party there 5 hours before kickoff at the stadium. It's week zero. There's no other games. There's a rivalry that doesn't play that often. I just hope it's, I don't even think it's going to be capacity, but I hope it is. And I just hope it's a wild scene. You know what?
Absolutely.
All right, jumping to the other side, Shane, Gainesville. Oh, Dan Mullen, he met with the media here on Monday, and as he always does, he had a lot to say. He was joking. He was feeling good. before we get into the meat of what he had to say, Shane, I just thought it was hilarious. He was asked about suspensions, and then he was also asked about, you know, the depth chart and all this. So let's play the depth chart clip, and then let's play the suspension clip.
And I know offensive line, especially creating depth, was a big concern in camp. Who would be your first guard and your first tackle up after the starters?
I don't know. We'll see how this week goes in practice, see how they figure it out.
Do you feel comfortable about any of those guys at this point?
Well, a lot of them are young guys, so I want to see how they, again, they have never been through a game week at this level, so I'll see how they handle it all.
Dan, I know you talked about injuries. Do you expect any suspensions for this game?
If we have any, like we always do, that'd be something we'd announce on Saturday before the game.
All right, Shane, based on that response, there will be some suspensions a-coming. I mean, am I wrong? I mean,
no, he don't have the list memorized yet. You know what I'm saying? Didn't he do this last year? Is this the same thing, or is this Georgia? I don't know. It just feels like every year there's a couple of suspensions they got to get out of the way at the start of the season, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's definitely not unique to Florida, but I just think this is just was a stupid way to answer that. I mean, I don't know what is there to really gain from
if we do. Not saying we will.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple of questionable injuries that hold people out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
But I thought the highlight of Dan Mullen's presser, Shane, who's talking about embracing the spotlight of the week zero. It was kind of a silly question by the reporter asking him, you know, you guys get tight for you're the only game on all this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I thought Dan Mullen gave the perfect answer here.
It's not too often that you get the college football stage to yourself unless you're playing in a title game of some sort. Do you embrace that? Do you not mention it with the players in terms of not wanting to overwhelm them, or you do the opposite?
No, we're all in. I mean, we're embrace it. It's out there. I mean, hey, you get everybody, you know, everybody in the country's waiting for college football. Excited about college football. You know, to me, and it's a Saturday, you know, so a lot of teams aren't practicing. You know, a lot of teams haven't started their game week yet. To me, one of the great things, and even challenge, not just the fans, all the other teams are watching us. What are they going to see? What are they going to think? What's our stamp? You know, and everybody, every college football person in the country turns on that game. What are they going to see? What's their thought when they watch the Florida Gators? And we got to go out there and live up to that on the field. Yeah, what's our, you know, I mean, everybody's watching. What do you want them to think about you? You know, and embrace it.
All right, Shane. So the eyes of the nation will be on Florida, Miami this Saturday without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Mullen puts it here, I mean, show everyone what you're made of. Show them how good you are. And that's the right approach. And it's got to be that instead of playing with fear. You know what?
Absolutely. Now, this is great right here. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people complain about Florida getting an extra week of practice, you know, but they've really got a lot of pressure because everyone's going to be watching this game. So, you know, when he talks about embracing it, you know, that's it. You've got a chance to kind of create the narrative for the Florida Gators this season with this one game. I mean, it's kind of like that Texas A&M Clemson game. A lot of people watched that game and then they didn't watch any more Texas A&M, but they thought Texas A&M had a great team because they competed with the national champs. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Same thing here. People aren't going to know unless they're like huge SEC followers like us or a Gator fans, obviously, they're not going to know what the Gators do week three or week five, you know what I'm saying? But they're always going to remember how they started the season against Miami, just like LSU did last year. And if they come out and destroy Miami, you talk about a signature win and creating a narrative and helping recruiting. There's a lot of things riding on this game.
Yeah, without a doubt. So that's why Dan Mullen playing it right. It's more of an opportunity than a challenge. And I think if they take that approach, I think they're going to kill the Hurricanes if they take that approach.
Absolutely. And I know they're doing this for year 150. I hope this thing becomes a trend, man. I hope we got a game like this every single year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So another thing Dan Mullen had to say here, Shane, that Florida fans should really appreciate. He was asked about the progression of Felipe Franks. And I thought this is probably the best quote he gave of the day here.
Dan, you alluded to earlier regarding Felipe, talking about how we'll see in terms of whether he can get to that standard that you're talking about. When you see
as him, a leader,
yes, and but also as a football player, when you look at how much he improved last year,
mm-hmm.
both as a leader and as a player, is he going to have just as much improvement this year to get to where you want to go? Want him to go?
Well, I think I have more improvement this year. I think he's already improved, you know, more during the off season than he did throughout last season and on the field in his performance and understanding the system and decision making and how to, and making plays. But it is the big picture of the quarterback. You know, it's every intangible that comes with that of how you manage the game. you know, your decision making and your leadership and your mental physical toughness, all of those aspects of things at the quarterback position that I think he's taken huge strides at, more than, you know, he's completing a higher percentage of his passes. You know, I mean, I've seen him do all the on the field stuff at a much, much higher level, a greater improvement from January to now than all of last season. So, but the we'll see is the leadership of how he's going to handle the highs and lows and the adversities that we're going to face, whether it's a adversity of success or adversity of defeat, and how we handle all of that in between.
All right, Shane. So according to Dan Mullen, Felipe Franks improved more this off season than he did during the season last year. And we all know, I mean, this time last year, it was like, when's Felipe going to get benched? That was kind of the narrative. And then by the end of the season, it's like, my God, this guy, I mean, he could be a Heisman candidate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the talk. So if he's made, I mean, this could just be coach speak, but if he's made a bigger leap than that, I mean, he's going to be a special player this year.
Yeah, I mean, because he did progress last year, you know. I mean, there was at times we were wondering if he was going to be put on the bench, but he, like at the end of the season, he was actually looking pretty damn good out there. So if he's made bigger strides in the offseason, then I don't know, man. I'm not willing to trust Dan just yet. I want to see it in action. I want to see Felipe in action. I just want to see a better quarterback this year. Not like he was a turnover machine or anything like that, but, you know, something we talked about. I want to see a little bit more mobility, a little bit of that Dak Prescott-esque quarterback, you know, that we saw with Dan Mullen. Mm-hmm. If we can get that, yeah, I think the Gators can surprise a few people this year.
Well, speaking of Felipe Frank, Shane, he had a little bit of a media availability today on Monday. And, man, this guy, his confidence level, at least speaking with the media, is night and day different. I remember last year you really pointed to, I think it was, they were asking him, you know, like, what are your thoughts on potentially winning the job? And he was like, well, that'd be nice. If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't, you know. And now, I mean, this is damn night and day here. Felipe Franks heading into his junior season.
What are the expectations of you, yourselves? You know the outside ones, but within the team.
Within the team, I think going into a year, I think that you would be wrong if you weren't going with the expectations of winning a national title. I think that you would be selling yourself a short. And I think that this team is really special. I think that we expect to win games. I think that's the Gator standard. And we expect to go out there and win every Saturday and try to, you know, make a playoff contender and win a championship here again. That's the expectations every year.
All right, Shane. So he's laid it out there. I mean, they have high expectations. He's got the highest of expectations. And, I mean, a lot of it rides on his shoulders, but he seems far more comfortable in that role.
Dude, this is his team. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this was Dan getting to him, talking about alpha dogs or something like that. I mean, now he's so pumped up. He's winning 20 games this year and a national championship. You know what I'm saying? That's where he's at right now. So, and hopefully he's bringing the team along with him.
Now, Shane, we've been doing a lot of sunshine pumping here for the Gators.
Yeah, we have.
So I want to.
It's almost making me a little sick, Mike. I ain't going to lie.
Let me ask you this, though, because we'll jump to this clip of LaMichael P. Ryan, and he specifically notes the AP poll, so that, you know, they're looking at that. Let's just jump to that, and then I'll ask you about it on the back end.
I feel like now we're getting a lot more respect than what we usually get in the AP polls. A lot of times it'll probably be like ranked 25th in the nation, maybe not even ranked, but it's good to have that. Being number 8 in the country, man, seeing a lot, showing a lot of hard work, you know, and just more to come for this program.
All right, Shane. So he's fired up that the Gators are getting their respect. They're in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this pure confidence here, or is this potentially, you know, when coaches say we've been reading our damn press clippings? I mean, this seems like exactly what they're talking about. What he's kind of, I mean, it's like they're studying where they're at in the poll. You know what I mean? Every day.
Yeah. You don't want your players coming out talking about an AP poll, you know, the day of. That's 101 right there, because you're right. And if they fall, and I'll say that they're going to, but if and when, if they lose a game, it's going to be that much worse on this team, you know, because they're focused, like you said, on where they are and where they think other people think they should be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've always, you know, it just feels like if something goes wrong and they're so curious about the media that it becomes a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the let's go back to the Sunshine Pump and Shane, because we we do got this update right before we jumped on the pod here. Tim Tebow, he's going to be at the game, I assume, for his SEC Nation responsibilities. And Dan Mullins asked him to speak to the team during pregame. The Gators got that. And Tim Tebow, of course, whipped Miami's ass back in 2008, I believe it was. 26-3. So he's undefeated against Hurricane. So, hey, they got Tebow on their side. And, I mean, that's about almost as good as you can get right there.
Absolutely, man. I mean, honestly, who would you rather hear before you go on the field, Dan Mullen or Tim Tebow? You know what I'm saying? not that Dan Mullen's a bad guy. I could just hear him doing a lot of pauses and things like that. Tebow's going to get these guys fired up. He's going to get their minds right. That, you know, he's doing what a lot of these athletes are striving to do with their future. So, yeah, they're going to be pumped up, man. This is a good move for Florida.
All right, Shane, this will be kind of a quick one. We're recording late. I know we got some reviews to get to, but we'll get to that on the next episode. Do you have anything else before we hop off here?
Absolutely. Mailbag questions, too. If you got some mailbag questions, when we post this pod review on Twitter, you can put your mailbag questions in there. You can also do it on That SEC Podcast on Reddit, and we, of course, are on Twitter as well. So we're going to try to get to some mailbag questions tomorrow, Mike.
All right, Shane. So that'll do it for this one. Remember to give us a 5-star heart on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever the hell it's called now. That really helps out the pod, and we'll read them here on the air. Thank you for joining me, Shane. As always, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.
Stoops, you know, he seemed like he was really pleased with both sides of his ball, which is interesting.
I'm sorry.